now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Jody Cook from the North American Dogman Project, and we'll provide links to the North American Dogman Project.com. And without any further ado, Jody Cook, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
How you doing? Thank you.
Thank you for coming on, Jody. The subject of Dogman has really come into the consciousness of a lot of people who take the time to look into cryptid studies and cryptid research. Could you give our listeners an idea of how you came to an awareness of Dogman, the significance of Dogman, which led you to creating the North American Dogman Project?
Well, I started the North American Dogman Project in 2006. I was just basically doing it myself. And from there on to about, about 2016 is when a couple of my friends decided to, they wanted to get into it also. So that's officially, that's when it came, you know, came about in 2016. And we built a site, had a really good site, got a lot of members coming on it, a lot of people, you know, following the site. And it just kind of blew up from there.
You'd mentioned that you'd become disenchanted with some of the Bigfoot research community because of all the incessant infighting and squabbling and selfishness. And you kind of broke away from that and began it because you yourself had, if memory serves, a Sasquatch encounter or a sighting, Jody. And then you broke off and you did this Dogman project. To this day, there is a school of thought that dogmen are merely misidentified Sasquatch. Can you put to rest that whole notion? Because there are some severe anatomical differences between the two. And there's a lot of behavioral issues that differentiate the Dogman from the Sasquatch as well. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, a lot of Bigfoot researchers would say that Dogman sightings are Bigfoot sightings, and they're not. There's a big difference in, you know, in the two when it comes to sightings. Now, when I was doing Bigfoot research back in the 80s and 90s, I did get reports of Bigfoot that had a protrude snout or, you know, high pointed ears, and never thought about anything other than it was a Bigfoot. Now, the Dogman stuff kind of blew up when the internet came in, because a lot more people were talking about their sightings, you know, on social media and things like that. So, and majority of a lot of these sightings are like older sightings, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, you know, old. And, you know, when you go back and think about some of these sightings in certain parts of the country that far back, and you look at the Bigfoot sightings, and you look at the actual report, it's like, we have a newspaper article on our website, and I think it's 60, 70 years old, maybe a little bit older than that. And it was, they talk about a Bigfoot sighting and the newspaper, but if you read the article and you really pay attention, they're not describing a Bigfoot. They're describing a Dogman. You know, but when you look at these sightings in certain areas going back, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 years in certain parts of the country where you had all these Bigfoot sightings, that's all they're going to know it is a Bigfoot. Because you weren't getting sightings of Dogman. When they seen something large and hairy, you know, from a distance, you know, depending on what angle you saw it at, it's a Bigfoot. And that's how it came about. But, you know, like you said, when social media came alive, that's when everybody started putting in a lot more sightings. And you can see, you know, there's a big difference. I mean, you know, Bigfoot is large. He's bulky. He has long arms. He's muscular. He looks like an ape. Dogman looks like a dog. He's very slender. The legs are much different. The arms, are very much almost like human looking. The paw, front paws are somewhat human. The finger digits are much longer, and it has a snout like a dog, and it has high pointed ears. There's a big difference, when you're describing a Bigfoot, and a dog. I mean, it's just like, describing a gorilla or a wolf. There's a big difference between the two.
Can you give our listeners an idea, kind of like, I wouldn't say a summation, but a typical example of how an individual would encounter these beings, keeping in mind, folks, that increasingly these dogmen are being sighted closer and closer and even into urban areas, but a lot of people encounter them in the woods. And how do those encounters usually, I don't want to say typically, Jody, but how do they sometimes play out?
A lot of these sightings are that people are getting, okay? From what we did, on our website, we have charts where we put all this stuff together. And, it doesn't really matter, like on dogman sighting and Bigfoot sightings, there is a, difference in, times, seasons, days, and things like that. There's a big difference between the two. Dogman, he's seen just as much in residential areas as he is in the woods. He's seen just as much in the evening as he is in the morning and at night. They're there. I mean, there's no set, time schedule or anything for these things. Majority of Bigfoot sightings are in wooded areas. They're either at night, early morning. Very seldom you get a really good daytime sighting. But when Dogman, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. City, farm, woods. It just doesn't matter. The amount of sightings are very much, percentage rating are very, very close. And we have charts on our site that you can go to and you can look at the different of the seasons. They're not that different. The sightings, between the time of day that, and evening and stuff, there just isn't a difference there.
One of the problems I feel is that there seems to be an archetypal, almost ancestral memory resistance, Jody, to even acknowledging their existence because of the fear that is engendered by their mere existence and the possibility of the mere existence, and how the term werewolf has kind of, in many respects, almost has proved a hindrance in advancing the research, because by describing it as a wolf or wolf-like in appearance, it evokes comparisons with the werewolves of yore. People start talking about Lon Chaney and the Wolfman, and then it just throws the whole discussion out of kilter. What we're talking about is a canid-type creature that seems to be native to many parts of the world. And I know in my research, every once in a while, Jody, I land on my feet and I find myself in a hot zone, a place where there's a high density of activity for a given phenomena. And you and your team, you've sought out these hot zones, and being in Ohio seems to be somewhat of a dog man haven. Can you tell us about some of these places where there seems to be a lot of dog man activity and the kind of things that go on there and how they interact with the people?
Well, what we did, let's talk about dog man itself. The United States is the only country that really calls it dog man. Europe, they call it a werewolf. South America, they call it a werewolf. Canada, they call it a werewolf. Some places you'll hear dog man in Canada, but most of the time it is werewolf. Even in Australia, they call them both dog man and werewolf. It just really depends on, the person's perception of what they see. And when they see this thing, they always, they're going to think of a werewolf. You know, the name Dogman, it really shouldn't be Dogman. It should be Man Dog, is really how it should be described, because that's what it is. It's a man dog. So when you look at the high spots of this particular creature, okay, in the continental United States, the large majority of the sightings would be, in a whole, you would go from, say, Wisconsin going down to Tennessee, and you would shoot back up from Tennessee into Virginia, and it would be basically the northeastern part of the United States. That's where a majority of all the sightings are coming out from: Pennsylvania, Ohio, New Jersey, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia. That is like the biggest hotspot in the country. Now, yes, we do have a lot of really good sightings that are coming out of Louisiana, Texas, Utah, California, the Pacific Northwest itself. You know, we're getting a lot of good stuff, but not as much as we're getting out of Ohio. We're getting out of Tennessee, Pennsylvania, things like that. You know, these are the majority of all these sightings were taking place.
One of the case studies you and your team conducted was at a place called Germantown, and it seemed to be a hotspot, which even involved the Department of Natural Resources proving to be a hindrance of some sort. Would you like to talk about that ongoing case?
Yeah, Germantown, Ohio is kind of a unique situation there. It goes back all the way into the 70s, where they called it the Butter Street Monster, because there's a street there called Butter Street, and Germantown is one of the first areas they were building up to put houses in. You know, Germantown is a big farm area, a lot of, you know, cornfields, you know, a lot of soybean, things like that. So this particular street, where a lot of the houses were first being built on, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, and it was still within the woods, and they were seeing these creatures that were like werewolves, and it was on this particular street, because this street led deep into the woods, and they would call it the Butter Street Monster. And from there on, it went from the Butter Street Monster to the Germantown Werewolf. And there's one particular area in Germantown where the sightings are just growing. You know, a lot of animals were missing, even cattle. I found a cow, and one of the other guys on our team found a cow a few years later that they were eaten. I mean, something took these cows down a 7-foot ravine area, cross a river, back up another about 7 feet, and kill the cows there. Okay, so whatever it was is big enough and strong enough to carry these cows, because these cows could not have gone over there, because the only way over there is a bridge. Okay, and the bridge is so old, they stop traffic from going across it. So, and in order for the cows to basically get across that bridge, they would have to cross a road to get there, and they're not going to do it. You know, cows pretty well much stay where they're at. So we found a lot of large dogs that were eating on deers. And the thing about, you know, there is poaching going on there. I mean, don't get me wrong, but when a poacher poaches a deer, he's in and out real quick. There's a certain way he'll poach the deer to get the meat that he wants, and then he's gone. The deers that we're finding, the hides were basically torn from the tail, going all the way back over the head of the deer. And, you know, we have pictures where you can see where it was eating on the rib cage. You can see the teeth marks on the rib cage. And what's so odd about some of these kills is that no other animal has touched them. You know, and that's odd. You know, in this one, in this one particular area, okay, the DNR controls one side of the road, and the other side is basically owned by a private family. And when you're out there, you see all the animal tracks are on the one side of the road that's owned by the family. And I mean, you'll see deer tracks, you'll see coyote tracks, you'll see bobcat tracks, even snakes, where you see the snakes are all traveling on the opposite side of the road away from the part where the DNR controls. And the DNR put this huge fence going all the way across it. Okay, so the animals know that there's something over there. And that's why when they travel down that road, they stay as close as they can to the other side. Now, we were there September of last year. We were there, and we were actually filming for a show. And when we got there, there was a deer head that was put on a post by where we were. Okay. Now, could a hunter do it? Probably, but this was a fresh kill. And, you know, the Germantown, there's a lot of hunters up there, and these people respect the animals that they kill and things so forth. So no one would have put that there like it did. I mean, the body was there. The head was completely ripped off. It wasn't cut. It was ripped. And it was pushed down hard on this post. And we were just up there about a month ago, and that head is still there. It's bone now, but it's still there. No one's removed it. Not even the DNR even removed it.
It's almost like a warning sign, Jody. Like, if they didn't know any better, it was as if they knew you and your team were coming, and it's almost like an in-your-face kind of thing.
Yeah, honestly, that's what it's like. I mean, we've been investigating there for a very long time, and just recently, Jefferson Township Police Department put a facility smack dead in the woods there and put all these cameras around. Now they got all these cameras saying, you know, the area is being monitored. They got roadblocks with these huge, huge cinder blocks where they would pull in and block the road. You know, I mean, it's really weird. That, you know, here's this police department has no more than maybe 5-6 officers at the most. And, you know, they put this facility that is where they're monitoring what's out there, you know, and they're monitoring the whole area. So why would you do that? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, other than they know what's out there. I mean, we found tracks, a lot of tracks. We even have a Google Earth image of this one particular area where sightings have taken place. And you see this large, dark object walking in the field. I mean, this is a really good picture. It's on our website. It's on our website and under the, like, evidence page. And it's huge. Whatever this thing is, it's walking in the field. And we end up getting that on Google Earth. And now that particular image is no longer on Google Earth. You know, so there's a lot of stuff. I mean, we were out there. It seems like every time we're out there, the DNR shows up. When we were out there filming last year, the DNR showed up. You know, asking what we're doing, you know, do you have permits to be here? And it's like, you know, this is public land. You know, we're not in the area that is controlled by the DNR. This place in Germantown, it's like Bray Road. Okay. But it's a heavily wooded area where a road just goes right through. Okay. And if there's a deads in at that bridge. Okay, so this is a very unique area. It's a very scary area, and they know what's there, and they got it so where, you know, you can't go to that area where they block it. You know, I mean, they're even talking right now about flooding the area and making a lake in there.
Wow. Like,
I mean, seriously, it's like, why would you do that other than to push out what's there?
And it may have the opposite effect, Jody. The dog man, and there's probably a pack of them, may not like that. They may retaliate, because it's one of the things about dog men too that I've come across in my studies of them is they seem to be, at least some of them, vendetta oriented, where if they feel that they've been slighted or if humans have trespassed on their turf or for any reason, they pick up a scent of these people and they can follow them.
They'll follow them home. And they have done this. And Adam Davis is one of the guys on our team. And, you know, Adam was doing a lot of research on Dogman in Germantown, you know, before he even came on our team. And Adam was out one day, him and his girlfriend, up at doing research in the area. And the end down where the bridge was, he found a woman's shirt that was just shredded and bloody. Found her pants that was just shredded and bloodied. So what Adam did, he called the police and told the police. And he said the police just basically blew him off. He's like, I'm telling you, I mean, I've got bloody clothes here. Something happened. You know, because people did at one time, they would walk up there, and then they don't do it anymore because they were seeing stuff and being chased. And so Adam goes back the next day. So they left. He's talking to his girlfriend. He goes, let's go get the clothes. Let's go get this. Okay, the police aren't doing anything about it. So he goes back the next day. The clothes are gone. He said, you can see where they just completely cleaned the area up. I mean, just completely cleaned the area up. And he said there was one spot where the shirt was, and you can see where someone was driving back and forth over the area where the shirt was. Like they were covering up or destroying evidence, you know. So we know that, you know, that incident happened. So ever since then, you know, he's sitting at home and he's, you know, would look out his window from watching TV and he would see like bright eyes.
Oh, geez.
And, you know, in the cornfield, and he goes out there and he sees these things in the cornfield looking at him. And one actually even came out of the cornfield up to the house and looked in the window. And this all happened ever since he found those clothes. You know, so I felt bad for the guy because he moved and they're still coming to his old or to his new home. I mean, wow. he's seeing them in the cornfield over there, and his wife, you know, she's doing dishes and she looks up and one is staring right at her in the kitchen. You know, they do. They will follow you. They pick your scent up and they'll stay with you. And, you know, he's terrified for him and his, you know, wife and child, you know, cause he just doesn't know, you know, what these things are going to do because, you know, he's investigated these things and never seen one until, you know, he found the clothes and he's had like three or four encounters with these things. And he said one night, him and some of his friends, he wanted to take his friends out there because they were asking about it. He goes like, you know, you guys don't want to go out there. And they're like, yeah, let's go out there. So the bridge was open. So they crossed the bridge and they're driving. Once they come off the bridge and they're going down the road, he said, there's one right there.
Oh,
I mean, he said, it's like they knew he was coming and, you know, he took off and like, you know, the people just went, you know, ate crap, you know, in the car because they said this thing just stood there on the side of the road while they took off and watched them. And they were able to see it when the lights were hitting on it as the, you know, the car's going off. You know, they're able to still see the thing. But it's like man, he just does not like going out there anymore, because he said, you know, these things are following him. And I mean, he is as sane as any person I've ever met. He's extremely intelligent, you know, individual. And he would never make anything up. He would never make this up. I mean, this guy, he was bawling like a baby when he was telling us this. He was that terrified. And I'm telling you, Adam's a big dude. I mean, he's a huge dude. Okay. And, you know, he's literally crying like a baby because it scared him that much. And it's just like, if it's able to make someone like him cry, he's not making this stuff up.
Well, being an investigator, he would know that these things are quite lethal. I mean, we're familiar with the Jurassic Park movie, and the paleontologist is talking about, oh, the lethality of these things. But the Dogman, as differentiated from Sasquatch as an example, whereas once in a while, someone stumbles, is in the wrong place at the wrong time, there's an alpha around, and there's some young or something, and then, you know, they got logs and stones and what have you thrown at them, and then it becomes an incident. But some of these dogmen, it seems, Jody, viciousness and their sadistic nature and their cunning is off the charts, because the reports of, sometimes they don't even seem to eat the animals, they just wipe them out. They just rip them to shreds.
Because here's the thing. What we came to the conclusion of is exactly that. You know, these things, they kill. They're an apex predator. They kill, okay, and I think they kill to leave as a warning. Okay, now we did this case in Akron, Ohio. This guy, it was just him and his daughter. They raised German Shepherds. He had a kennel, and he raised German Shepherds. German Shepherds, very high-dollar dogs. He had 15 of them, and he was out in the woods with his daughter. They were just walking, having a good old time, and he saw one. He saw one look at him from around the tree. His daughter didn't see it because she was, you know, real young, and he kind of like, you know, come on, honey, let's just go on, go. And he picks her up and he's carrying her and he keeps looking back. And as he's, you know, looking back, it's kind of following. So a couple nights later, you know, one of his dogs is dead. German Shepherd. I mean, we've got pictures of these dogs. We've got x-rays from the vet on what this thing did. And the vet said she has never, ever seen any type of, you know, attack on a German Shepherd like this. She goes, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, this thing was taken by the back of the neck with one bite and snapping the neck. Okay. Bears can do it, but this wasn't a bear. These weren't bears. You know, a bear's not going to go up and attack a German Shepherd. German Shepherd is the only canine that is the closest to a wolf than any other breed of dog. Not even a Siberian Husky is as close to a wolf as a German Shepherd is. The German Shepherd bite is probably one of the most horrifying bites you can get, other than probably a pit bull. Okay, the bite radius, the strength of the bite can literally break a bone. They're strong dogs, and they will fight back. These things never had a chance. Whatever this thing was, got it. And at one, there was a video we have where this thing busted in through the back of the kennel to get to this one dog. You know, this one German Shepherd. So he lost 8 out of 15 dogs.
Jeez.
So he said, man, this is enough. He packed his bags up and left, you know, and took his dogs and moved to another location. You know, there's, you know, these things, they kill to prove a point. Another particular case was in Utah where this, I want to say like farming community, maybe, really nice residential area. People had farms, they had livestock. They had horses. There are about five or six houses in this one particular area. And everybody there knew that there was a Bigfoot in the area. Everybody have seen it. They know it was there. The Bigfoot never bothered any of the livestock, never bothered any of the homes. You know, it just basically would pass through and people saw it. So they knew, they weren't afraid of it because it never did anything to show aggression. So then they started to see animals being taken. They're finding deers dead in the woods. They're finding their pets missing. And they're like, well, man, you know, it couldn't be the Bigfoot because he never did this before. And then one night, they all heard this ungodly screaming coming out from the woods. And there was two large animals fighting. One they said we know was the Bigfoot. The other one, we have no idea what it is. And it went on for 5 minutes and then it was gone. It was silent. Then the next day, they start seeing evidence of a dog man, a large canine. You know, people are their horses are being attacked. I mean, we have pictures of one particular ranch where this thing went after the horses and five claw marks, five were going down the chest of this horse, five of them, you know, and so that means whatever this thing is, it has a opposable thumb in order to do that.
Yes.
And that's very unique to a dog man having that thumb. And it's also unique for a Bigfoot to have it. But this thing is, you know, it's toying with this one particular neighbor. Okay. She would go walk in the woods and she found a dead fawn. The throat was ripped out and the reproduction organs were ripped out. So, you know, she took a picture of it because she thought it was, you know, somebody, this was not an animal kill. Somebody mutilated this poor deer, baby deer, because of the genitals being removed. So she goes, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bury it, because she's an animal right activist too. She was going to go bury it and then notify whoever she wanted to notify, you know, to let them know what's going on. She wanted to bury it so no other predator would get to it. So she goes up to her house, gets the shovel, comes back down, it's gone. So she thought, well, you know, damn, a, you know, predator got a hold of it. So she goes back up to the house. The next day, she's going for her walk in the woods, and there it is in the same spot, the same exact spot. And she's like, wow, something's not right here. So she goes to get a shovel to bury it. Comes back, it's gone. So, you know, she goes, okay, something's wrong here, you know. So she's walking a little bit further in the woods, so she's seeing these trees with claw marks on the trees. And what these claw marks are most likely, you know, marks, territorial marks. So she's finding these really large canine tracks about a size of her hand, okay? So she's taking pictures of them. And these are huge tracks. And what's so unique about these tracks is that you can see where one of them, where it you can see where it's postable, where it's able to move. I mean, which is kind of really unique for this track. And so she goes back, she tells her husband says, you know, try to stay out of the woods unless you, you know, let me come with you. And she's like, okay. So the following morning, her husband decides he's going to go out and take a look for himself. Well, he goes out and he finds the fawn in the same spot. Okay. So he's like, man, this is weird. So he decides he's going to go get something, you know, a shovel. And he goes, so he's going to pick it up and carry it back. And it's gone. So he's like, stay out of the woods. There's something there that's not right. So, and this whole process, right? She's telling me that, you know, the police are like driving up and down the road really slow and looking into the woods. They said he'd never, ever do that. It's like the police knew what was going on because the police presence in that area was, you know, triple digit, you know, to what it was, you know, before. So they would hear these god-awful screams at night, you know. They could describe what they were. And her daughter looked out the window one night, and there's right behind the house is the corral where they keep the horses. The horses were going nuts. The light, the security light flicks on, okay, when the horses got closer to that where the house was. And she said her daughter drew this really good picture. And she says it was a dog crawling along the corral. And she said this thing was probably 7 or 8 feet long. A dog crawling along the corral. I mean, this is, and she drew this picture, and it's a beautiful picture. And, you know, so this dog man was coming up along the corral. Wasn't bothering the horses, but it was coming towards the house. You know, so, I mean, this is the kind of craziness that is going on in this particular area. And she said it kind of died down for a while. And she sent me an email, let me know. She goes, things have kind of died down. We haven't seen any animals attacked or anything like that. The police presence has gone down. But she said the Bigfoot is back.
Uh-huh.
In the area. So whatever this was, dog man was in this particular area is gone because the Bigfoot came back. And I truly believe, I mean, Bigfoot's strong, he's huge, but I truly believe they stay away from this thing. I truly believe that, because when you look at Land Between the Lakes, Kentucky, okay, there is a road, it's 22 that basically cuts the area in half. Majority of all the Bigfoot sightings are in the southern part of the park. All the Dogman sightings are in the northern part of the park, which is odd, because you would think they would be interacting, and they're not. They have territories where they stay in that park.
A clear line of demarcation, Jody. And yeah, you know what's interesting, exactly. Also, what's interesting is there seems to be, for lack of a better term, almost an unnatural, unholy aspect to the dogmen, because when a, you know, other apex type predator shows up, I don't know, I'm not that much of a woodsman, but I mean, is it common for everything suddenly to go silent and not even any chirping going on, not, you know, normal nighttime woodsy or jungle sounds kind of thing? It all just ceases when
it does.
Dogmen show up.
It does. This Germantown, perfect example. The area that's owned by the DNR, where all the sightings are taking place, you can stand right there and you will not hear one cricket. You just walk 5 feet over the road and you can hear crickets and everything. I mean, that is how weird it is. You know, I mean, there's something about Dogman. And here's the thing. We broke it down to three categories. You have flesh and blood. You have a supernatural aspect to it, which is interdimensional, shape-shifting, disappearing, coming back type thing. You know, talking to someone, telepathy type. We've had sightings like that. And then we have the extraterrestrial part of it. And that is the part that is so unique. Because the majority of all these sightings that deal with extraterrestrials came from military people that has had encounters with these things in combat zones. That is what's unique about it.
You mean they were in a conflict somewhere in some part of the world or in training somewhere in the continental U.S., and then they encountered these beings?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Canadian and American soldiers, both. We've got quite a few reports from Canadian soldiers who have seen these things in Afghanistan And here's the unique thing, okay, of all the military sightings, even the one special operations guy that talked to us that encountered, had a dealing with him in South America, they all describe these things. Hold on a minute. My PC thing jumped on, said ready for updates. I'm like, sorry about that.
Oh, it's quite all right.
All these things they claimed were wearing some type of a body armor or some type of suit. Now, they either seen a blue light prior to the sightings or blue light after the sighting. Okay. So basically what they're saying, they saw an extraterrestrial wearing some type of suit with the head exposed, and the head is of a wolf.
Well, that's interesting, Jody, because when I first heard of the concept of Wolfman, or even before the term Dogman came into use, because of my research into ET's underground bases, the deep black military ET connection, I started getting reports. This would have been in the early mid-90s, of wolf-type beings seen in the context of a deep black military operation. Okay?
Exactly.
And some of these were wearing uniforms. In fact, a colleague of mine told me a story of a family getting lost driving up Tehachapi Mountain in the San Gabriel Mountains of Southern California. And they came across an Air Force officer who was drilling like a platoon of these wolfmen in uniforms. And then what happened was they all took off running after this car with this freaked out family. They were picking up stones and rocks and throwing it at them. And then the family turned around and split the area. A personal friend of mine was...
Where was this at?
That was in Southern California, I think near the San Gabriel Mountains, near the in the Tehachapi Valley somewhere. There's a large mountain there that's cored out. It's an underground base that locals call the Anthill. Northrop has a facility there where they do all this high-tech stuff that's related in some way to ETs and ET technology. Mm-hmm. But this happened like at the foot of the mountain. And a personal friend of mine was, two personal friends of mine were abducted by wolfman beings. One of them was taken into an underground base in a mountain in Arizona. And my other friend was in the high desert of Southern California. She had been outspoken about some of her alien abduction and military experiences. Next thing you know, this wolfman being shows up and threatens her and talks to her in English. We told you mm-hmm. not to talk. So I think it's possible by this point, Jody, that, okay, let's say that these dogmen are native to this earth. They're just part of the flora and fauna. And, you know, setting aside the notion of how we humans got here, there's a whole school of thought that says that we were transplanted here by ETs or whatever. What's to say that deep black elements of the military have not captured one or more of these things, or at least found a carcass of one of these things, start doing the genetic splicing and dicing, and the next thing you know, right? And that's not even going down the alley of if ETs have been interacting with them, because we know that some ET groups interact with Sasquatch. They've been seen within close proximity of each other, flying saucers and Bigfoot. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I talked with a guy who was prior military, and he was with the Special Operations Unit. He was former U.S. Army Special Forces, and he was part of a recovery / capture, I guess, team for the federal government. And this team was formed of former Special Forces, Navy SEALs, Air Force Commandos, things like that, all prior Special Operation guys. And he told me that in the early 90s that we had captured about five of these canine aliens, okay? And they were so dangerous because they're an apex predator, okay? And it's a new species that we basically got in contact with in the early 70s. Was like the first time, you know, we made contact with these things, and it wasn't good. And we were finally able to get a hold of, you know, a group of them. But like I said, he said they were so dangerous, they would not keep them in a continental United States. They kept them in a facility in South America, okay, in a very remote area. So these things, he said, they're extremely intelligent, but they don't have what we would consider common sense. But they were intelligent. But they wore body armor. He said there was like a halo-type body armor. They do have a mask or a helmet they wear that is shaped like a canine, but they're able to breathe our atmosphere, so they always, you know, kept it off. And they apparently took over this facility and basically killed everybody in there, got out of the facility and went into the jungle and ended up going into a village and was killing everybody in the village there. So they had to go down to South America to eliminate the problem. They were told to kill them. Don't capture them, kill them. And they did. You know, but he said they had like a special type of weapon that they had to use because of the body armor that they were wearing. But he said they let this very scary sound they made when you killed them. He said it was just, I mean, it was just, he said it's not nothing you would ever want to hear. He goes, I can't sleep at night because I hear that sound. You know, so know we have contact with them. Okay. Now, and I'm going to tell you another story. Then I'm going to go back to that. And I'm going to tell you this. Now, there was another guy that was in the army. They were out on patrol. They knew there was a lot of insurgents in the area. There was a patrol that they couldn't get in contact with. So they don't know if they lost, you know, the radio in a firefight or they lost a patrol. So they're out looking for it. And this is in Kandahar Valley. Okay. So they're going through the hills and the team kind of broke off. Okay. So he kind of heard something. So he didn't want to say nothing to the rest of the team. So he kind of moves up this hill a little bit. So, you know, as he's going higher, he's hearing like cries for help, and you know, but it wasn't English. You know, it was someone that's being killed or hurt. So he looks over the edge of this hill, and he sees that there's two dead insurgents already on the ground, one standing there, and he said there's these two werewolves wearing spacesuits, standing there with this one insurgent, and he's crying. And he said they had this sword in their hand. And the sword, he said, was like the kind of sword that you saw on the Scorpion King, which is called a Pharaoh's sword, which is kind of like a large sickle almost, you know?
Yeah.
And if you ever look at pictures of Anubis, he's carrying one, the yes. same exact sword. And he said he cuts this guy in half from the shoulder down. He just went, whoosh, I mean, just cut this guy in half, you know. And he said all of a sudden they start like sniffing in the air, you know, like they picked up his scent. And he said, man, these things are like wolves. He goes, I can't believe what I'm seeing. And he said, one of them, they're standing next to each other. The one on the right basically takes the back of his hand and taps the back of the hand of the other one, like, let's go. And they move on. And then he said, there's a blue light. They're gone. Okay. So that's weird, because the first guy who told me his story in South America, told me they had these swords. You know, I'm like, man, this is weird. And then, like I said, I go back and I look at, you know, pictures of Anubis, and I see, you know, here's the god of death, you know. And if you do your research, you know, dog-headed men and in the past, that's common. It was common. You know, St. Michael, or St. Christopher, rather. The original St. Christopher was a dog-headed man. And when he got sainthood, and here's the neat thing about it. He was part of a tribe that was in battle with the church. Okay, and he was captured, and he redeemed himself and went towards Christianity, become a better person. And with that, they granted him sainthood. And by granting him sainthood, they gave him a human head. But if you look at some of the original artwork of him, he has, you know, a dog's head. King Lycan in Greece was a dog-headed man. The Bible even talks about tribes in the Middle East that were dog-headed men
cynocephalized
that would, you know, trade with people. I mean, so, you know, these were species that was here on Earth. I mean, it's, you know, when you go back and you just talk about this stuff, I mean, even Viking mythology talks about Japanese mythology, every single mythology around the world going back thousands of years talk about these dog-headed people. So, and then all of a sudden they just disappear. So did they disappear? Were they killed off? You know, did they leave like some of the other gods, the Anunnaki? I mean, we just don't know. The flesh and blood dogmen that are like here now, I think that these are descendants of them. I don't think the ones that are here are actual flesh and blood aliens. They're just, they're descendants of survivors of what was here at one time. I mean, it's mind blowing. I'm not kidding.
There's a lot we can delve into in the second segment, Jody. And thanks. I don't even want to end the segment. We have to. But the point about the blue light also, in some of the more metaphysical type Sasquatch cases, they've been reported, likewise, blue light, poof, big Sasquatch is gone. So at least some of the Sasquatch, not all, but at least some, seem to have this metaphysical capability. And it seems maybe some of the dogmen have some of this metaphysical capability.
You know, what's so kind of unique about it, you know, when I was doing UFO research and Bigfoot research, I never, ever believed in a connection between UFO and Bigfoot, okay? I honestly believed that, you know, when humans were abducted, Bigfoot was abducted too. Okay, and when people would see them walk out of the craft or appear after a sighting, maybe they were abducted and they were being put back. You know, why wouldn't an alien species abduct them? You know, I don't think Bigfoot has anything to do with extraterrestrial. I believe it's a species that was altered from human and ape to be a completely different species by extraterrestrials. There's a possibility that's what it could be. I mean, I don't think it's a Neanderthal. I don't think it's a Cro-Magnon. If you look at the tree, I mean, a human is a primate, just like a gorilla, chimpanzee, and orangutan. Okay, but the Bigfoot is his genetic setup. It's both of ours. I mean, you look at the Patterson film, okay? This thing has a butt. A butt is a human trait. It is not a primate trait. You ever seen a gorilla with, or chimpanzees with a butt? No, because the butt is the muscles that helps us stay erect as a human species. Okay. And another human trait of Bigfoot, when you look at the pattern film, is the breasts. The breasts were very human looking. Primate breasts are not firm like human breasts, human female breasts. Okay. The foot on Bigfoot and, you know, in the Patterson film, that particular five-toed foot is a human trait. The facial features are human trait, but the rest of the body is ape. Okay. The long arms, the hair on the body, the muscular structure of the creature, the strength of the creature, which comes from the ape. Apes are muscular. They're much stronger than men, than the human, you know, human species, you know, so so you see both traits in this creature, and there's no other way that could happen unless we mated, and that's not going to happen. These things were genetically created between the both of us. You know, the humans, and you had to look at it, the human, you know, we're the smartest of the primate. We evolved. We were able to communicate in language. We're able to kill one another. We're able to build and use tools. Okay. You can see this in a lot of other ape species. You know, the chimpanzee is very, very close to the human. They grieve when a family member dies, just like us. You know, they're monogamous. You know, they will kill to kill out of anger. They will kill in packs, just like humans. They're no different than humans. I mean, the characteristics between a human and a chimpanzee, it's so great. It's just, I mean, can you imagine if a chimpanzee, you know, was able to communicate like a human or think like a human? We, even though evolved as we are, I mean, we are, our species would definitely be at risk. Because here's another human-type species that's much stronger than us, that's able to communicate. And plus, the human species, we can't coexist with ourselves, let alone another type human species.
Yeah, that opens up a whole can of worms, Jody. We'll tell you what, it's a good time. Like I said, I don't even want to stop, but we have to. We'll end this segment. And then we'll carry on from here. We've been listening to Jody Cook from the North American Dogman Project.com talk about the dogman, the upright canine, canid beings. It's been a fascinating discussion. So all our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.